debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. We are live here at the American Postal Workers Union, the APWU, and here in Washington, D.C., doing our show. And a special tip of the hat and thanks to the APWU for having us here. And Mark Dimenstein is the president of the union. He's sitting right here with me. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here, and welcome to the American Postal Workers Union.
Thank you. Tell me about your union. I know there's also the Letter Carriers Union. Right. What's the difference between the two of you, and what do you all do?
Well, the American Postal Workers Union represents 200,000 of the 500,000 postal workers in the United States. We represent the people you would go buy stamps from in the retail units. We represent the people that sort the mail, often during the night, so it can get to your homes and apartments the next day. We represent the people that maintain the buildings and the machinery, and we represent the people that drive the trucks and also the people that keep it all going with the information technology and the accounting side of the Postal Service.
That's a lot.
And there's a lot of proud postal workers that we represent. Very proud to serve the people of the country.
Yeah, that's a marvelous thing it is. So let's talk about the post office as an institution.
Well, the post office is probably one of the few institutions we can identify that's actually ensconced in the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
And we think it's a wonderful national treasure. It's a very important institution in terms of the democratic rights of the people. It's got a wonderful mission of providing universal service to everybody, no matter who you are, where you live, how much money you make, what's our gender or color of our skin. And it's there to serve the people. So we're big fans of protecting the public postal service. Yeah. It's truly a treasure that belongs to everybody. It runs today with no tax dollars. It runs off the patrons that use it. And while it's facing some challenges of changes, it certainly has the potential to be vibrant for generations to come. It needs to be.
Why is it that so-called conservatives are always talking about destroying the post office when it was literally one of our founding institutions?
Right.
I mean, Ben Franklin, as I recall, functionally started the first, in Philadelphia, the first post office.
Tom, it's interesting. There are probably a lot of conservatives that do like the public postal service. For instance, in many small towns, it's the heartbeat.
Yeah.
Of that town. But the answer to your question, I think, is as simple as follow the money. So those who want to privatize the post office takes in about $70 billion a year of revenue.
Whoa.
So there's a lot of people that would like to get their fangs into that and be able to make a profit off of it, rather than have the post office continue in the main as a nonprofit public service. It's not called the United States Postal Business. It's called the United States Postal Service for a good reason. So, I think the simple answer is that the privatizers would like to make profit where they can. Yeah. And, of course, when something gets privatized, whether it's the Postal Service or public transportation or any other form of public service, those entities that are making a profit are going to both reduce service generally and lower wages and benefits for the workers generally, which also spins off in a negative way into our communities.
I've heard the story, and you can reality check it for me, please, that one of the reasons that, I mean, going back to the Reagan administration, Republicans have been talking about privatizing the post office, is that it is the, Walmart was the largest non-unionized employer in the country, and the post office is the largest unionized employer in the country.
That's probably
so
some
giant union busting right. scam, too.
It is, and the fact is that the unions have not only provided a better way of life for postal workers and our families, which, as I said, helps the communities as you yeah. people have money to spend and can go out to eat at a restaurant, or their kids can have music lessons or join the sports teams and so on and so forth. But the privatization is just going to lower the service time, and that's what happens everywhere a public entity is privatized.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you've got to pay for the stockholders and the executives and everybody else. Yeah. Talk about postal banking. This is something that Bernie made kind of a keystone of his campaign, and I haven't heard it much from anybody else.
Well, our union is working very hard on what we call a campaign for postal banking. So what you have in this country, and the post office is well positioned to address a deep social need, what you have in this country is a fact of life that some 60 to 100 million people don't have access to regular banking services.
That's like a third of the country.
A third of the country. And that's accelerating as well, because banks are less inclined to be in neighborhoods, less inclined to be in small towns or urban neighborhoods and so on.
And when they are, if you're poor, the fees will just kill you.
So the fees are killing people. So what we have is this development over many decades of what we call the predatory payday lending industry or legal loan sharking.
Right.
And what we have found, and there are many people have been working on this around the country for years in their own cities and states, is that it's this alternative banking system that's preying on, particularly on the working poor, takes in about $89 billion a year in fees and services. And the Office of Inspector General of the United States Postal Service, so this isn't coming from the American Postal Workers Union, they actually did a study that showed the average person that makes $25,000 a year that gets stuck in this predatory lending industry, payday lending, check cash and pawn shops and so on and so forth, spends $2,400 a year in fees and services. That's 10%
of their income. That's why it's such a profitable industry.
So now here we have a United States Postal Service, publicly in the public domain, public servants accountable to the people, trusted like no other agency is trusted in the post office. That's in every town, 33,000 post offices. Mm-hmm. Why can't the post office, as they have done in the past, why can't the post office basically establish a public option for banking? Now, it's done all over the world.
Yeah, I lived in Germany in the 80s, and you could do basic banking stuff.
Basic banking. And actually, the post office still today does some financial services, such as money orders.
Yeah.
And we would like to see that expanded. There's no reason why the post office can't do paycheck cashing and people don't get ripped off just cashing their paycheck. There's no reason that they can't have some kind of low-fee debit cards, no-fee ATMs, money transfers, both domestically, internationally. So we're part of a national campaign for postal banking. Although when we say postal banking, we're really talking about, at least in this moment, some expanded financial services. We think it would be great for the people of the country. It would serve a real social need. It'd be great for the post office, because the post office is there to serve the people and bind the people together, and this is another great way to do it.
Right.
And we have a website, we meaning the Campaign for Postal Banking, for your listeners who are interested. It's called campaignforpostalbanking.org, and it's a coalition of 18 or 20 national groups working on this.
That's great.
Issue.
And the 4 is spelled out, F-O-R. So
F-O-R.
Campaignforpublicbanking.org.
For postal banking.
Postal banking.
Postal banking.
Campaignforpostalbanking.org. Yeah. That's great. That is great.
Do you by the way, Tom, every time somebody hears about this, they think it's a great idea. Now, we don't talk to big-time banking CEOs. They may not think it's such a great idea.
They don't
but the people on the street, the people we talk to in the workplaces, and our own members would really love to provide that kind of service.
Do we have any champions in Congress for this?
Yes. Senator Warren from Massachusetts is a big champion. Senator Brown of Ohio. And, of course, Senator Sanders has been very keen on this issue as well. And I'm sure there's many more.
Right.
But those are the most notable.
We're hitting a break. Mark Demenstein, the president of the American Postal Workers Union, with us. And we're broadcasting live from the American Postal Workers Union. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with the American Postal Workers Union right after this. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X chair want you to feel the X chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom. That's xchairtom.com. Check out xchairtom.com, and be sure to use THOM as the promo code for your $100 discount. And welcome back. Mark Demenstein still with us, and I just have to say, you are great. I mean, this union, the work that you guys do, it is to have a union that is genuinely progressive and, you know, genuinely supporting progressive ideas and causes. You know, not all unions do that, and I think many do, but it's great. Other issues, I've got, you know, vote by mail, your support for the Bernie campaign, the conversations about Trump we can talk about. Where would you like to start with that?
Well, that's quite a list.
Yeah.
Well, I think we are in a tough political moment in this country.
Yeah.
For working people, not just for those represented in unions, but all working people. I think the corporate America, if you'd like to call it that, the Wall Streeters are having too much say and sway. I think this new tax bill, the budget conversations point to that. I mean, here you have a tax bill that's not popular amongst the people of the country. The majority of the people of the country are not happy with what's happening.
Right.
And yet you have those in charge of Congress pushing through it. It's a direct transfer of wealth from us, the people that do the work, the 99% of us, into the corporate coffers.
Yeah.
So you have just a tax break that's going to take a corporate tax rate from 35% to 20%.
When corporations are on average are paying 17 or 18% right now. So what, they go to minus 3? We're paying them?
At that on average, and we have a tax structure set up over many years, really by both of these political parties, where some of these corporations never pay taxes. It was striking a few years ago. General Electric Company made $14 billion in profit and paid zero in taxes. In fact, they got refunds. So, you know, that money's going to come from somewhere, and it's going to come off the backs of the people if they indeed go through with this tax bill. It's not a reform bill, they call it that. It's not a jobs bill. We've been through the trickle-down economic process during the Reagan years, and it's just a hoax. So if this tax, if these tax bills pass, we're going to have to get ready as the people of this country to fight to save Social Security and Medicare, because that's what's coming next.
Yeah. Well, they proclaim
Congress is going to say, hey, we don't have the money.
Yeah.
But they're just draining the coffers that can serve the people on needed social programs. And so it's certainly a difficult time. Now, in our union, Tom, just like every union, we represent people through the entire political spectrum. We got people that are Democrats. We got people that are Republicans. We got people that are independents. We got people that are socialists. We got people that are libertarians, right? And so we encourage our members, and this union tries to look at the issues, not the individuals as much. We have plenty of people that supported Trump in the election. We believe they supported Trump because people were tired of the status quo and the business as usual, and I'm one of those people that are tired of the status quo and business as usual, and that's why our executive board supported the Bernie Sanders campaign. But people will learn that our problems in the world are not going to be solved by corrupt billionaires of any political party, and we're going to have to solve our problems through a movement. So we like to talk about the issues, whether it's Medicare for all, whether it's defense, not just defense of Social Security, but expanding Social Security.
Right. Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment with Mark Zimmenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. Stick around. We're back with President Zimmenstein, Mark Zimmenstein, the president of the American Postal Workers Union. We were just talking about the union supporting postal banking and supporting the Bernie campaign, actually, that you guys. And I was telling you before we went on the air, the story of, you know, I lived down in this marina here in D.C., and a lot of military guys down there. And I knew several who were big Bernie supporters during the primary who ultimately voted for Trump. Did you see that kind of dynamic among your membership? And if so, what's up with this?
Well, yes, we did. And I think your own experience underscores that people were ready for change. They were tired of politics as usual. They were tired of candidates representing Goldman Sachs and the Wall Street fat cats. And they were going to vote for change. And I think once the Bernie Sanders campaign was moved aside and he was not the nominee. And by the way, we didn't have any illusions that one person is going to be able to solve our problems as good as that one person might be.
Right.
We believed in one of the strengths of the Sanders campaign is we talked about building a movement to make change. But once Sanders was moved aside, that opened the door, in my view, for somebody like Trump, who was talking on the issues, hadn't been there like Bernie had been there, Bernie Sanders had been there on the issues, whether it was trade, right? And in many ways, primarily trade and NAFTA and the cost of the manufacturing base of this country. It opened the door for someone like Trump to become president of the United States. We have many Republican members who came to me during the whole political season and said, you know, I'm a proud Republican. And we look at that as a strength in our union. We represent people, as I said, across the entire political spectrum. But they said, Bernie Sanders is talking my language. Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me. Let's go rebuild the infrastructure of the country with real public money and good paying union jobs and so on. Why shouldn't people have college education, tuition paid? People think one of the great things about the Bernie campaign, if I can divert on it,
feel free,
is he was aspirational. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, oh, we can't win that. Oh, we need a little piece of it. It said, we deserved it. So in that sense, he uplifted
how
workers feel about himself. You know, I'm wearing a button that says workers deserve respect. Yeah. And part of respect is to have health care for all and to have college tuition for all. And we can win those things. My mother, who grew up in New York City, went to Hunter College paid for by the taxpayers. She went to Hunter College for free. It's not impossible.
Yeah. Well, my dad went to college. I mean, he didn't graduate ultimately because my mom got pregnant with me and he had to drop out.
It's all your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. He ended up working in a tool and die shop for 40 years, but it was on the GI Bill. And what we know from the GI Bill, and Louise's father, he actually graduated and became a lawyer and became the assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan on the GI Bill. Neither of them paid a penny for their education. In fact, they both got a stipend. And what we know now is for every dollar invested in the GI Bill, we got seven additional dollars in tax revenue over the 40-year lifespan of the working people that we wouldn't have gotten had they had lower paying jobs because they didn't have an education.
And that's a good example of the importance of the public good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That really was the public good.
And to have a union talking about that is Medicare for all. Actually, before we get to that, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier before we got on the air that you guys have worked with the Canadian Postal Workers Union.
Over the years, we have. That's right. And
they all have Medicare for all.
They have Medicare for all. Now, they had to, you know, the Canadian people had to fight and win it. It's different province by province. There are some differences. But basically, they have a single-payer Medicare for all health care system. And over the years, as we've interacted with our postal worker counterparts in the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, we've talked to them about their experience with the Canadian healthcare system. And we were very struck during this whole debate on healthcare over the last year that neither the Democrats or the Republicans really talked about the experience north of the border.
Right.
It was We got to defend the Affordable Care Act, and there's some things worth defending, but there are also some serious problems. Or, and that was the Democratic Party position, or the Republican Party position says, oh, we're going to basically drive everybody off the health insurance rolls and make things worse. But it was a day, and much worse. But it was a debate between bad and worse. Very few people were talking about what we really need. Mm. And here we have this experience where people could cradle to grave coverage, full choice of physician, and people never see a bill. They pay a small tax. The corporations pay a small tax. And it's a wonderful health care system. And people say, everybody's got to wait in line for this and that. Heck, I wait 4 months to get appointments with my specialist. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are things that if they're not urgent, you may wait a little while. Sure. But I'd rather trade that off to not have to choose or not have people have to choose between medicine and food, health care and housing. And that's what happens to millions and millions of people in this country. And it's getting worse here. Now, our people have health insurance because they're union represented. But even postal workers are paying higher and higher premiums. We have all our deductibles. We all have our co-pays. We have all the co-insurance. And at the end of the day, we're paying thousands and thousands of dollars more than we would if we had single-payer health care. So we're very pleased to see that, you know, Bernie Sanders has a new bill that 17 senators have signed on to. I think it's Senate Bill 1804. I think we'll talk about that more later in the show. So we're, the people of this country do support Medicare for All, and that's a good thing.
Amen. Mark Dimenstein, the president of the American Postal Workers Union. We'll be back. We're going to pick up some of your phone calls after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And I'll be back with your calls after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program, broadcasting live from the American Postal Workers Union, APWU, the website apwu.org, by the way, I should mention. And with me is Judy Beard, the legislative and political director of the APWU. Do you refer to it as the APWU or as the Postal Workers Union? Is there a slang that you use?
Postal workers.
Yeah, postal workers. There you go. So Judy, tell us first of all about you and your job, what you do here.
I have a very, very interesting job. It is to educate our membership on the legislative issues that's currently being discussed in Congress, as well as what they can do to impact the decision of the members of Congress.
And so what are the issues that you feel are most important? You know, vote by mail is a big one for you right now.
Vote by mail is one of the most important issues that we should think about on a long-term basis, because we elect people right now through a system that is unfair, because people work. They can't get off work to go vote in many, many cases. Their car could break down. They could have an emergency. The voting poll places could be, you know, out of reach. And we should have vote by mail.
Yeah.
It's the fairest way to, you know, our democratic process would work.
Right. And one of the slick little tricks for voter suppression that they use these days is putting into poor neighborhoods or minority neighborhoods the crappiest voting machines, the old clunkers, and half the time they don't even... I mean, a friend of mine, Garland Gilchrist, is running for the city clerk in Detroit, and they're doing a recount right now. And they just opened one of the boxes. There was nothing. I mean, you know, some of those machines are just not even counting. And forgive the
not only
tangential
that,
rant, but, you know.
People go out to vote and stand in very, very long lines.
Right.
And, you know, they can't stand in those lines that long because some of them may be sick. Some of them, children may be home and they had to rush home to their babysitter. So the fairest way is vote by mail, and it works. In Washington State, in Colorado, in Oregon, they have vote by mail.
Yeah.
And
I've
it's all it. Elections yeah. of vote by mail. And the ballot comes to the home, you sit down, relax, you vote, you mail it back. And the postal office is one of the safest and trusted institutions that there is. So vote by mail.
Are there any real champions for that in Congress right now, people that we should be encouraging?
There are two bills currently. The Senate bill is 1231. The House bill is 2669. And there are real champions up there for vote by mail. Bernie Sanders is one of them.
Great. So, and other issues, postal banking.
Postal banking is also something that is needed to help working families. Mm-hmm. Many banks are in what we call deserts, bank deserts, mm-hmm. because within a 10-mile radius of their home, there's no bank. And not having a bank, you are forced to go to these pay lenders and pay high prices for cash and checks. Yeah. So no one should have to do that out of their the little paycheck that they get.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's something that other countries do. The tax bill, the budget, all this stuff. Or is there, on your list, we'll follow yours. What other issues are you telling your members about?
We're encouraging our members to pay attention to what's going on in Congress with the tax bill. You know, we don't know what is going to come out of conference. And, you know, we know that the tax bills is for the rich and it's not for us. And we know that, you know, those who might get a little tax break, the middle class that might get a tax break, it's going to end in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the rich is going to just get their tax break. It's going to continue forever. Yeah. So we have to watch who we elect and then watch what they do in Congress. And when we're dissatisfied, we need to pick up the phone and call them. Or when they're home on break, we need to go to their office and let them know what we think of how they are voting or express how we would like them to vote.
Right. Yeah, it's powerful stuff. The other things on your list?
Yes, the budget as well. We know that...
Is there a budget?
Well, there's, you know, of course, there's no real budget. What we know that once the tax bill passed, they're going to try to, you know, take it out of our paychecks to pay for it. And we have to watch everything Congress does, every single thing. And when it impacts our lives, it reflects on who we voted for in the first place. Yeah. Or maybe we didn't vote at all. So I think in the 2018 election, the American people are going to be fully aware. They are tired of what's going on in Congress, and they're going to go out to the polls, and they're going to vote, and they're going to elect real leaders that support working people from issues of... you know, this tax bill, they have, it's a jobs bill. Get real.
Yeah.
The bill, $15 an hour, people are opposed to that in Congress today. They leave the minimum wage so low that people can't even afford to pay for, you know, the food for their families. Health care is a big issue in this country. Postal workers are concerned not just about the post office, but they're concerned about their families as well. And we're out there fighting every day to make sure that the democracy in this country is preserved, is some comeback. And it's a bad situation right now.
What kind of feedback do you get from your members, from your Postal Workers Union members, on where they see the priorities for both the union and the country?
Well, first, the postal workers are, you know, are looking at their families. And they're seeing that, you know, post offices are, you know, closing or threatened to be closed because the Postal Service is running out of money. And the Postal Service is only running out of money because of the fact that they have to pre-fund their health care of the workers 75 years out at $5 billion a year based on what the government put into place.
Yeah, that was a poison pill in 2005 during the Bush administration, but I thought that had expired.
But they still owe debt to the Postal Service. The Postal Service still owe debt on that. They haven't paid the bill since 2012. And they're squeezing the workers, meaning that, you know, without money, they're, you know, threatened workers' jobs, and they're threatened, you know, workers' lives by moving post offices or closing post offices. And it's really a bad situation because taxpayer dollars don't pay for the Postal Service. And, you know, a lot of people think that taxpayer dollars pay for the Postal Service. It's the sales that they make that the Postal Service is run off of. And they have not paid this $5 billion bill since 2012.
So in point of fact, if Congress, if the Republicans in Congress wanted to destroy the post office, if it was funded with public money, they could simply pull the funding. but because they couldn't pull the funding, they changed the rules of the game to say you've got to set aside money to prepay the health insurance expenses of people who are not even born who might work for your union someday. That's crazy.
It is crazy. There is currently a bill, H.R. 756, that will, you know, help pay for this debt that has been growing over the years. H.R. 756, and APWU and our members support this bill, and we just want some relief from the Postal Service.
That's great. That's great. Judy Beard, she is the legislative and political director of the American Postal Workers Union. Judy, thank you so much. It's been great meeting you today.
Thank you.
We'll be back right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In just a moment, Cliff Burleson, the clerk craft director of the APWU, will be with us. Welcome back. And with me right now is Clint Burleson. He is the clerk craft director for the American Postal Workers Union. APWU.org is the website. Clint, am I mispronouncing your last name?
You got it right.
Oh,
perfect.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. So what does the clerk craft director do? Those are words that I'm
right. Well, do. So, you know, craft is workers are often divided into crafts. They have certain types of jobs they do.
Ah.
So we have three crafts. We have the clerk craft, which is the largest craft, over 100,000 workers. They're the ones who work at the window. They work in the back getting the mail delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the maintenance craft, doing maintenance type of work, custodial, fixing the machines. And we have motor vehicle craft that does the driving between the post offices. And actually, we have support services type of people who do IT type of work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these different crafts, and so I'm the clerk craft director.
Ah, so you have a peer, a colleague in each one of these.
Yes,
roles.
And we try to ignore that and just work together as one.
Yeah.
One union,
yeah,
basically.
That's great.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Postal Service and democracy. How do these things fit together?
Sure. Well, in the very beginning, the idea was, you know, when the people were starting the new country, they wanted the post office was a big part of it because they wanted people to be informed, right? So they made it so that it was cheap and affordable for people to communicate.
This is fourth class mail, basically newspapers.
Newspapers
could be delivered
were the
almost
big thing,
free.
Right? And so, I mean, they wanted an educated democracy. And you know, of course, not everybody could vote at the time, right?
Right.
But Frederick Douglass, for example, Frederick Douglass, the escaped slave, he fought abolition. He had a newspaper, mm-hmm. and he was able to distribute and get their information out to people to influence the debate.
Yeah.
And so all this alternative types of things that where people were able to express themselves without necessarily commercial money.
Right.
Just kind of like what you've done, right, on this
yeah.
show, right? I mean, first, I'd like to thank you and Louise and Free Speech TV for providing this kind of alternative voice to the commercial media that's so much needed, right?
Well, thank you, Clint. Postal Service and democracy are intertwined. What about the influence of the larger mailers?
It should be, right, in the beginning that one rate for all people, all mm-hmm. over. So from, you know, from New York to California, the same price goes, right? And everybody pays the same. Well, the large mailers started to say, well, you know, we're doing this large volume, so we should have to pay less.
Right.
So they've been arguing for less all along. So they're getting these large
That's
discounts.
The third class mail thing.
Yeah, the second class of advertising mail.
Second. Okay.
And even on first class, if they have a large volume, they've been getting discounts.
Right.
So they're getting these large discounts, and they want more and more discounts. And what happens when they have these discounts is they've set up these private shops now. Like Pitney Bowes owns them, other corporations like that. And they've come out of the blue. So you have these corporations pre-sorting the mail for these discounts.
Right.
And the owner is making millions. And the workers are making like minimum wage.
Mm.
And so there's a transfer of work also from the post office where there's union jobs
right.
paying decent wages. The top of the guy, Postmaster General makes maybe $300,000 a year. So it's a very more equitable distribution of the income. And then you go to the private, and the workers are paying minimum wage, and the CEO is getting $8 million a year.
Wow.
So this discount thing, it's not only bad for workers, but it also makes it hard for a new, like a new magazine wanting to come in.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that volume, right,
yeah.
you have to pay, it's harder to get into the game.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
people
yeah.
like Time Warner is interested in keeping, you know, other people out, for example.
Yeah. Louise and I saw that years ago. We used to own an ad agency, and we also did seminars all around the country. We dropped about 2 million pieces of mail a month.
And if it was pre-sorted, you got a different price.
Right.
And there were companies that would do the pre-sorting for you. In fact, some of the printers that we used would do the pre-sorting for us. But it wasn't, this was back in the 90s, early 90s. It wasn't a giant industry at that time. It was just a service that sometimes added on. So you're trying to say, basically, if sorting is being done or even pre-sorting is being done, we do it here at the post office?
We should. And they're just giving too much of a discount now. So they're incentivizing. It's kind of like privatizing by incentivizing.
Yeah.
But giving these discounts, it's privatizing the post office.
Yeah. That's a good one. The long lines at the post office. What are you
Okay. So let's go back a little bit
and
to
with the holiday season.
Yeah. You mentioned the PAEA, Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, where they applied the pre-funding mandate,
right?
So they have to fund. So they made a manufacturer crisis with the pre-funding and with a price cap. So there's a price cap on postage. Which is, who has that, right? What business has that? So there's a postage cap on an index that doesn't really apply to an organization like the Postal Service. So now they're stuck. They don't have enough money, which they wanted, and so they're making cuts. And one way they want to make cuts is by reducing the people going to the post office. Why? Because the large mailers don't care about that. They don't go to the post office, right? So they figure, let's have people like Staples do it. Let's have Office Depot, you know, deal with the mail. We were fortunate. We have an organizer president. We stopped the Staples. We had a successful campaign to stop Staples from outsourcing our mail, basically.
Wow.
But that's what they're continually trying to do. So they short-staff the window, and they have a sign saying, you know, go over here for your postal needs or something like that, or go online or use stamps.com or whatever.
Right.
So they're encouraging people to go away from the post office. And who benefits? The large mailers are benefiting because it kind of reduces their overall institutional costs.
Yeah, remarkable. Clint Burleson, he is the clerk craft director here at the American Postal Workers Union, APWU.org. Clint, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Great meeting you.
Great meeting
you. Thank you. We'll be back. Stick around. Hey, everybody's talking about superfoods, those nutritionally dense foods that are especially beneficial to your health. Did you know that one of the most powerful superfoods you can put into your body is beets? They're loaded with an important nutrient that increases your blood flow, which increases your energy. But who wants to eat a pile of beets every day? Not me. But now you can get the energy benefits of beets in a powerful, concentrated superfood drink, Superbeets. Only Superbeets is made from beets grown to exacting standards, then concentrated into superfood crystals. Superbeets promotes the body's own natural ability to produce healthier circulation for increased energy and stamina all day long. So if you want the benefits of a powerful superfood, call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com. With your first order, get another 30-day supply of Superbeets for free, plus indicator strips to see how Superbeets is working for you, and free shipping. So call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com today. That's 800-568-9889, tomsbeets.com on the interwebs.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from the American Postal Workers Union, the APWU.org. APWU.org is the website. And Mark Dimmenstein, the president, is back with us. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, and welcome to APW.
Well, and
glad to have you here.
Thank you for the space to use to do
Anytime.
Our show from. It's
Anytime.
So nice. It looks just great. So, amazing stuff that you guys are doing. Tell us about the Grand Alliance.
Well, we have the United States Postal Service is a wonderful institution that belongs to the people of this country.
Yeah.
And it's under pressure by those who would rather have it in private sector hands, those who can make a profit. But that is going to also undermine who gets service. Mm. The post office is constant in the Constitution, but if it becomes it belongs to everybody. Everybody has the right to service, no matter who we are, where we live, how much money we make, what color skin we have, and so on and so forth. But those who would like to privatize it, all that gets into jeopardy, right?
Yeah.
If it's a question of who makes a quick buck, then maybe I can't go to your house because I can't make a buck going to your house and you don't have service anymore. So we have reached out to the public. And help build a grand alliance to save our public postal service.
Mm.
It's at agrandalliance.org. Understanding that it belongs to the people, but the people of the country have to make sure it stays in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's got over 80 national organizations, about 150 if we add in local and state organizations, other unions, civil rights organizations, faith-based organizations, community organizations, an organization like the National Council of Churches with 80 million members, who all understand that the post office is really a central part of what we need in this country in terms of our communication, in terms of our rights to privacy, in terms of the sanctity of the mail, and so on and so forth. So, you know, for those who are interested, there are a couple great videos on the website of GrandAlliance.org. One from Willie Nelson, the great country singer, talking about the post office. One from actor, social activist Danny Glover, whose parents were postal workers.
Oh, wow.
And union activists. Yeah. And they're very short. You could, anybody who's listening could look it up, share it with your friends and family, and let's spread the word about how we're going to keep the post office vibrant for generations to come, as it should be.
Yeah, amen. And tell me why it is important to have a public post office, not just in the context of not getting ripped off, but in the context of a democratic republic.
Well, it's so the mission of the Postal Service is universal service at uniform rates.
That's the mandate.
That's the mandate. That's the mandate of the law. Mm. And of course, its foundation goes back to the very Constitution itself. Right. So that enables everybody to have access, whether you're low income, high income, rural or city. You know, the idea, imagine putting 49 cents on a letter and going from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, or to Alaska, or to Florida, or New York, or across the street. So it provides everybody, the principle is it provides everybody equal access, a flow of information and ideas. And once it leaves the public domain, all of that becomes in jeopardy because it becomes somebody's bottom line.
Right.
And in fact, you know, look, there are other companies in the package parcel business. The workers are doing a good job and working hard at those companies, too. But companies like UPS and FedEx put millions of packages in the postal stream,
right,
because they can't make a dollar going to rural Vermont, where my sister lives on a dirt road, for example.
Yep. Yep.
So it shows that even other businesses and those engaged in commerce need the post office. And in the day of e-commerce, where the world is changing. I mean, my children, they're grown adults. They have children themselves. But they don't use the post office like my wife and I use it.
Mm-hmm.
But they shop online.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Somebody's got to deliver that package.
Right, a lot of it's coming to the post office.
A lot of it's in the post office. But then if everybody's going to have equal access to e-commerce, you're going to have a public infrastructure that can then deliver.
Right.
And the post office is positioned like nobody else to do that. And we think there's tons of things that the post office can do to even further serve the people of the country.
Like
we talked earlier about postal banking, financial services, paycheck cashing. We are promoting vote by mail, which I know you're going to talk about a little more in the next segment. I've talked about earlier. Look, I mean, if people can get creative, why can't the post office have charging stations in front of post office for those who want to use electric vehicles and deal with some of the environmental crisis we're facing in that way?
Sure.
But the post office really is ours meaning the people's, and we can use it in much more creative ways.
My recollection, and our recollections aren't always accurate, but my recollection was...
Especially as we get older, Tom.
Yeah, let's not go down that road, Mark. Was that back in 2005 during the Bush administration, just before the Republicans put this poison pill in that the Postal Service had to set aside $5 billion every year for people who aren't even born yet,
right,
just to kneecap them, that in 2004, the Post Office either announced an action or an investigation into the possibility of an action to replace, I just remember this really clearly, maybe it wasn't the Post Office who said it, maybe it was a private group, but they pointed out that they've got the largest fleet of vehicles in the United States, and that most of these vehicles are used on a relatively local basis.
That's right.
And that they don't go long distances. They go house to house to house to house,
right,
and they're perfectly positioned to become electric vehicles. And so at the very least, hybrids. And the Postal Service was looking into greening their fleet. And of course, this $5 billion a year hit the Republicans put on them in 2005. Took that whole conversation off the table. Am I remembering something wrong?
I don't know myself on the exact years. I do know that the post office has been willing to look at a greening of the fleet if they had the capital to look that way. Right. I know our sister union, the letter carriers, is certainly open to that, but they, of course, want the safest possible vehicles.
Of course.
And,
yeah.
You know, because their folks are going to be driving them. But I think we're all very open to that and we encourage the post office to do it. But I do want to add one thing to your comment. It did, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act of 2006 did strip the post office of any capital to do those kind of innovative things at that point. But it was a bipartisan vote.
Yeah.
There was no Republican. It was at the end of the Bush. It was in the Bush administration. Not at the end. It was in the middle. But there was no dissenting vote on that Postal Accountability Enhancement Act.
I asked Bernie about this on the air, and because he voted for it, as did most of the other Democrats. Right. I was like, how did you vote for this? And he said, I had no idea that there was that $5 billion kicker in there. That was thrown in, like, literally the day before
it was,
the vote.
Well, that's a very interesting thing, because it was actually in what they call the lame duck session, the last day, the last night.
Right.
So that's probably very accurate.
So the Democrats got snookered, and the Republicans...
Got snookered, or some of them may have been asleep at the switch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's possible that the unions weren't as vigilant as we needed to have been at the time, too.
Yeah.
And, of course... Maybe nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, but maybe some didn't realize that the economic crisis was around the corner, and that certainly exacerbated what happened with the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a back to the, you know, there's a lot of creative things that the post office can and should be doing and are doing in other countries. So we look to do some of those things as well.
Yeah.
You know, we were very keen on the postal workers having good, safe, dignified working conditions and making a good living. We think it helps our families and our communities. But we're also very strong that we want the best service to the people of the country, and we're very proud. Our 200,000 members are very proud of the work we do, and I know that's true of just about all postal workers.
Me too. Mark Dimmenstein, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, and keep up the good work, helping to be a voice to the 99%.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In just a moment, Debbie Ceretti will be with us, the Vice President, Executive Vice President of the Postal Service. Tom Hartman here with you, and very happy to have with us here in the studio at your union.
Yes.
Debbie Ceretti, she is the Executive Vice President of the APWU, or of the Postal Workers Union.
Right.
And Debbie, thank you for joining us. Am I mangling
your last
name?
Thank you for having us. Yes, Ceretti. It's perfect.
Oh, yep. Good. Good. Thank you. So tell me about this democracy initiative that you all are working on.
Okay. Well, the democracy initiative started in 2013. And one of the reasons why APWU got involved is because right now we're really trying to get our members to understand that they have to be activists. We can't just depend on the union stewards, the officers anymore. It's become a situation where we all have to get involved. So when we tell them that we want them to get involved in the community, to be able to represent our customers and to help them as well, the whole point is we've got to show that we're doing the same thing. So here at the headquarters level, as Mark just talked about, we have the Grand Alliance, but we also signed on to Democracy Initiative. And Democracy Initiative is about 64 organizations. Most of them are national organizations nationwide, and they represent about 35 million workers. But we got to get those workers out there to be activists.
Mm.
So this organization, actually Larry Cohen, one of your friends, was mm-hmm. one of the co-founders.
Yeah,
of,
he's the former president of the Communication Workers Union and,
yes,
and
he's,
board chair of Our Revolution, and we did our show Monday from his place.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
Oh, wonderful.
Larry's a good guy.
So, yeah, so the Democracy Initiative is not just unions. We're talking about organizations like Sierra Club, Greenpeace, Jobs with Justice, democracy groups. So this is like a number of groups pulling together because we want to fight for social issues, economic issues, and about voting rights, getting our voting rights back.
Right.
So, and taking money out of politics. That's
is there
a
website for the Democracy Initiative?
Yes, democracyinitiative.org.
Okay. And for people who are listening right now, is there a way to participate in the Democracy Initiative? And what are your short-term and long-term goals?
Okay, so yes, so if you want to get involved, go to the website. You can sign on. But also, all of the organizations have their people throughout the country getting involved in activities. So like some of the activities that we've been involved in recently, a couple of them that were winners, because those are nice to have. I mean, you can't win unless we act collectively. But one in Illinois, they just passed the automatic registration voting rights. Mm-hmm. So that was a wonderful thing, and we were part of that. And then also here in Howard County in Maryland, we got a small donor fair election policy, and it's going to take place in 2022, but it's a step in the right direction, taking money out of politics and allowing candidates who don't have the money to be able to participate in a campaign fairly.
Yeah, that's important stuff. It's very important stuff. So long term, you know, where do you want to be and in what kind of time frame? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, so we have some actual goals. And we have plans for up to 2020. A number of them is going state by state, trying to get more voter rights, similar to situations that where we have Oregon, Washington, and Colorado that are already vote by mail. We're looking at going into states and again trying to get them better voting rights and vote by mail. So that's kind of an exciting thing. We're also looking at getting more small donor campaign programs so that people can run for office.
How do those? How do you in a small donor campaign program? You just mentioned there's a community that just did this.
Yes, in Howard County.
Howard County, Maryland.
Yes.
How do they deal with a candidate on the other side who says, you know, I don't want to take the small money. I'm going to take money from the Koch network, you know, and I'm going to take $20 million from the Koch network. So you're a little, you know, $5 million that you get from the small donor. I mean, how do you deal with it?
I think what the program really does is it helps the person who doesn't have the money but who wants to run.
So
level the playing field for, you know, you're not going to be able to provide them all the monies that the other candidate has,
right.
But you're just going to give them enough that they'll be able to have a fair chance.
Right.
So it's not really where you're limiting the person who has all the money.
Right. We had this for a year or two in Portland, and the city council put it in, and then ultimately they took it back out again. But the way it worked was every time the city would put up, if you got 5,000 people to sign a petition and give you $5, or maybe it was 1,000 people, I think, then the city would give you $100,000. And anytime your opponent spent more than $100,000, it became a matter of public record, and the city matched that to the person who took the matching money.
Oh, wow.
And so the guy who ended up being mayor, his opponent was a lobbyist for one of the dirty companies, you know, one of the, I forget what. Every time she took more money, it became a front page news story, and that's, you know, that didn't help her campaign.
Right.
So anyway, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
So
the Democracy Initiative is also involved in immigration rights. It's also involved in getting voter rights back for those that have served their time in jail and have had their rights taken away. And so I think there's just a number of things that we're looking forward to doing, and hopefully we'll get more organizations to sign on.
That's great. We have to wrap it up. But Debbie, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Hang on just a second.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Debbie Ceretti, Executive Vice President of the Postal Workers Union. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great having you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the headquarters of the American Postal Workers Union. The APWU.org is their website. And another tip of the hat and many thanks to them for letting us use this space today. Timothy in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Timothy. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Love your show. Honored to speak with you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring to your attention I'm sure you've probably seen it by now. It's been out for a little while. Robert Reich's new documentary on Netflix. It's called Saving Capitalism. It's really good. I highly suggest people watch it. It's a great, great documentary.
I've heard great things about it, Timothy. I've been on the road this last week and haven't had time to even take a good deep breath. So but it's on my list. I've heard it's really good.
And then one other question is, what do you think on a personal level? Do you think this current FCC is going to successfully kill net neutrality? I mean, it just seems like corporate media aren't really explaining to people enough about net neutrality, and they're not speaking against killing net neutrality and what this can do to internet is
what we're watching, Timothy. What we're watching right now is the slow but steady erosion of democratic standards, small d democratic standards in the United States, or for that matter, the standards of a constitutionally limited republic, small r. And we're finding that those democratic standards and institutions are being replaced by capitalist institutions and standards, essentially, by free market, raw, aggressive, destructive capitalism. And this is now the cancer stage of capitalism, which is oligarchy. And that's what's happening. Jimmy Carter said it on this program. You know, the United States is no longer a democracy. We are now ruled by oligarchs with unlimited political bribery. That was his phrase. And President Carter was absolutely right. The only thing that we can do about this is educate everybody we can, get people informed, get people registered to vote, and get people out there, because the only way to defeat money power is with people power. We've got to do it. Timothy, well said. Thanks for the call. Brian in Albert Lea, Minnesota. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, love your show. It's great to be on. I just wanted to say something about Franken. I'm one of his constituents. He seems like he's got nothing to lose right now. I wonder how if he could join the Republican Party. They wouldn't kick him out, right? He could temporarily join the Republican Party and then just, wait till this ethics investigation. Let Mitch McConnell come out and say he wants him to resign and, point out the hypocrisy. It would kind of be a Franken move, wouldn't it? A little funny.
Yeah. Yeah, if he joined the Republican Party, first he'd have to start attacking all the women. And, then he'd have to claim that nothing happened. I mean, there's a playbook, right?
That would be difficult for him to do, probably. But, he would have to turn his principles completely upside down.
Yeah, I don't think Al's going to do that, but it's an ironic point. Brian, thank you for the call. Well said. Jim, watching Free Speech TV in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Professor Hartman. Give me a moment to shout out to all the millennials and boomers in Alabama. Get out there and vote Tuesday and knock on doors for the weekend. And all your progressive listeners, take a road trip to Alabama. This is so important. If we can win this, we have to win back the House and the Senate. The Senate's a tough lift. The House, I'm pretty sure, is going to flip. I'm going to work my butt off to get all 14 Republican U.S. congressmen out of California. But every student in Alabama, know that Republicans are taking away your chance to get a master's and a doctorate unless you're rich. And carpool and get out there and vote
And apropos of your call on California and the 14, there is a website called Flip the 14, FLIPTHE14.com, Flip the 14. And they're identifying the 14 Republican members of Congress from California who have been consistently voting against the interest of their state and, of the state. And spot on, Jim. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Damien in Manorville, New York. Hey, Damien, thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM. What's on your mind today? Great.
Good. Listen, I'm a pretty hardcore conservative, but I have to say I'm very nervous about the climate today, political climate. I mean, look, I know it's a government and legal term, due process, but I think we're going down a real dead road here, because Al Franken, yes, that bad picture, I get it, and I don't like Al Franken. I'm a Ted Cruz supporter. He's railed against Ted Cruz over and over and over again, and I think he's real smug, Al Franken, but at the same time, Al Franken has a right to due process, and I'm sorry, all the people in your party that sold this guy out without seeing all the facts, it's very scary. And I could just ask you this, Tom, if your son was accused of sexually harassing someone and he said to you, Dad, I never did that, should you say, you know what, son, you were accused, I'm sorry, you should be fired and you should never work again? I mean, I think that this is the path they're going. If there's evidence against your son, then darn well, he should be fired. But if there isn't, prove it. We should be innocent until proven guilty, and it's wrong. It's wrong if it's against John Conyers. It's wrong if it's against Al Franken. And it's wrong against Roy Moore, who his lawyer asked Gloria Allred, let's have a third-party handwriting analysis, and she intervened silent. I'm not saying that Roy Moore is innocent, but that really shed some doubt here to me. What do you think?
What I think is that women have been afraid to speak up for centuries, for millennia, for thousands and thousands of years. Patriarchy, male power, and particularly white male power has ruled, has built empires and destroyed empires, and et cetera, et cetera. And there's a real downside to that, and we're seeing it in the destruction of our world in many ways, frankly. And I think that as we make this transition from a patriarchal, hierarchical, white male-dominated culture to an inclusive culture that includes people of color and women on an equal basis with white men, and we are nowhere close to that right now, Damian. You and I, as white men, have far more privilege than any of these people. There's going to be some collateral damage, and I would say that Al Franken is collateral damage in this, assuming that he is not quite the villain he's been made out to be. But that's just, that happens in revolutions. But Damian, can you imagine how you would feel if you woke up tomorrow morning and walked into the bathroom to shave, looked in the mirror, and discovered that you had awoken as a person of color or as a black woman, for that matter? Our brains are all the same. We think the same. We feel the same. We hurt the same. We love the same. But how would your life change if suddenly you were female or black or both? Damian?
Should be afforded due process. I mean, my God.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, all right. All right. I got it. Yeah, we're just recycling the argument. Talking to white men have to get this, right? Anyhow, end of rant. Bill in Godfrey, Illinois. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in particular to encourage my other Illinoisans to call our Senator Dick Durbin and have him sign on to this letter that's been sent to Ajit Pai over at the FCC to delay the decision on net neutrality that's going to take place this Thursday. He has not signed on to that letter. He is, of course, a supporter of net neutrality. Now, our junior Senator Tammy Duckworth has signed that letter. And then more generally, I would encourage people across the nation, if you're concerned about net neutrality, call your senators and have them sign on to that letter. Let's delay this until we know. Apparently, there is some indication that there may be fake comments that were botted into the FCC, during the open comment
period. Yeah, it's not just an indication. It's a fair certainty. Bill, I'm sorry, we're out of time. I hate to cut you off just as you're saying also, but you got to do it. It's the end of the show. It's the end of the week. We've had a great time in Washington, D.C. We'll be back in Portland next week, Lord willing, and the snow doesn't get us. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That includes you. And there's a million ways, literally a million ways, to participate in democracy. All kinds of great groups, all kinds of great things you can do. So get out there, get active, show up, tag, you're it. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.